Stay at home, my heart, and rest. Homekeeping hearts are happiest.
Stay at home, my heart, and rest. Homekeeping hearts are happiest.
Very good. Now we'll try our usual little exercise. You, Marjorie, will find this very necessary in the next few months. Repeat slowly after me, being careful clearly to enunciate your vowels. Programs, 5 shillings, please.
Programs, 5 shillings, please.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this podcast on the history of actor training in the British Drama School. This week, I'm going to talk about a couple of things. Firstly, some big news, and then I'm going to just read a few things that will introduce you and me to a history of the Rank Charm School, the Company of Youth, a fascinating little tiny moment when Britain had, or London had, a school dedicated to the training of stars. When I was a young actor, people would use Rank Charm School as a kind of joke, and I think it was one of those in-jokes that I never quite knew what it meant. Like, people would talk about having an at home, or things about the legitimate drama, and everyone would guffaw. I didn't really have a clue, but anyway, so I've heard of this thing, the Rank Charm School, and a little while ago I came across a documentary about it, and then a movie which you just heard, which is sort of a satirical examination of how the culture around the charm schools functioned, or at least of the culture of fame and stardom, or starletdom, was functioning in the period just after the Second World War. So this program will look a little bit, it's hard to find much material, but a little bit at the history of the School of Youth, the Rank Charm School, a school that was set up to train stars, was at least part of the idea, in the British film industry of the late 1940s and early 1950s. But before we get to the Rank Charm School and its pleasures and horrors, just to say that this has been a really important and significant week in the history of the British Drama School, because the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama, a school that used to be known as the Central School of Speech and Drama, has just appointed a new principal, Josette Bushell Mingo, OBE. I don't know Josette Bushell Mingo, but she sounds fantastic, I have to say. I read there's a long interview in The Stage, a long article in The Stage you can find about her. And it looks like a brilliant appointment, but sort of academically, artistically, in terms of administratively. So look forward to seeing where Central goes. There was a slight sort of error that I thought was interesting in the press release about the appointment of Josette Bushell Mingo. Both on The Stage and on Central's website, they spoke about her being the second woman to run Central, or only the second woman to run Central. And there was a reference that one of the governors had said about it being the first woman to run Central in 100 years. And something similar was said in The Stage. It's interesting that that's an error. Of course, the second principal of Central was Gwyneth Thurburn, who led the school for 25 years from 1942 to 1967. So a really significant period of time. Gwyneth Thurburn was a not uncontroversial figure, especially in her firing of Yap Malmgren for hurting students' voices, was the sort of the version of the story from the Central side, which led to the schism that eventually leads to the setting up of the Drama Centre, a drama school which is very shortly to close. Interesting, because I think if you were putting money on drama schools in the 1970s, you might have thought that the Drama Centre would be the one that would keep going. But anyway, the Drama Centre is about to close, and the Drama Centre's history goes back to a decision Gwyneth Thurburn made. She also brought Central through most of the Second World War. App was a hugely important figure, so I think it would be a discourtesy and an act of foolishness and ignorance to forget that Josette Bushel Mingo is the third woman principal of Central. With her appointment, it'll be fascinating to see who Rada appoints, because with her appointment, a number of the kind of the big players in the drama school world, Central, Guildhall, Lambda, Rada, the Oxford School of Drama, are all acquiring new leaders and principals. And I suppose it's those people that are going to lead the drama school into its post-COVID world. So the picture, certainly in terms of personnel at that level of those organisations, is starting to become clearer. So once we know who's running Rada, then we can see what those folk do with the drama school in this next important phase of its history. A phase of its history where, I don't know, I suppose one might hope for some kind of brilliant synthesis of post-COVID stuff. Will there be blended learning? Will the drama schools sort of expand their brands economically using that? I don't know. And then of course there's the sort of imperatives of ideas of equity and social justice. Clearly, most of those leaders are very concerned with those. So it'll be fascinating to see how that evolves pedagogically in those schools. Look forward to it. Good. So congratulations. I as far as I can tell, not that anybody cares what I think, but anyway, just to say, looks like a brilliant appointment, I have to say. So good luck. Good luck to Josette. Maybe she'll come on the podcast. I'll ask her. That would be lovely. Good. So that's that moment. There have been a number of kind of curious little attempts to do things. We've heard about Fanny Kelly before. I've mentioned Sarah Thorne. One could think of Saint-Denis' attempts to set up drama schools, so ultimately unsuccessfully. So now let's talk about the Company of Youth. I'm going to read you a couple of things. It's interesting that there are lots and lots of photographs, lots of pictures of the Company of Youth. And they tend to feature this one tutor called Molly Terrain. We're going to hear her name a few times in the articles. Molly Terrain is kind of my new person of interest, because very eccentric. She always is wearing a hat in photographs, a sort of a big hat with things dangling down the front. I think she's being mocked in that clip I played you from the film Lady Godiva Rides Again. I don't think it's Molly Terrain. I looked to try and see, and I don't think it is, but I think the film is definitely kind of doing Molly. Molly Terrain, so she's either a brilliant acting coach for Rank. The Rank company are the company with the big gong and the kind of the greasy man hitting the big gong with a big stick. That's the Rank company. And they were hugely important British filmmaking company, especially at this period after the Second World War. The British film industry was booming. And Rank, J. Arthur Rank, not only made films, but he also ran cinemas. So we're in the territory of a kind of Citizen Kane, sort of a homegrown British version of that kind of tycoon, incredibly powerful, or maybe one thinks of Succession for a contemporary example, hugely powerful. And J. Arthur Rank, I think, I'm not sure whether we'll return to this, but was a curious man, partly because he was a devout Christian, a Methodist. So the school of acting we're going to meet, which is probably the strangest school of acting that I can think of in the history of British schools of acting, has a funny mixture of kind of ambition and power behind it, and also a sort of moral, I don't know, sort of prurience, really. So Diana Dawes speaks about not being allowed to be seen with any kind of a drink in the photographs that they're in, and the photographs that there are a curious mixture of sort of wholesomeness and, I don't know, salaciousness. So there's lots and lots of pictures of young actresses wearing little kind of skirts, sometimes on haystacks or on a donkey or on a farm. Quite a lot of it's quite agricultural, or in evening wear at receptions. So it's very glamorous, a very glamorous world. Anyway, so the idea, the theory, and the weird thing about the Rank school of charm, this charm school, is that from the very beginning it's mocked. And this quality of mockery lingers around it in a spirit of what I could only call, or most usefully describe as begrudgery, I think. The Irish have this term, begrudging, or being a begrudger. And begrudgery is a hard thing to pin down. It's a sort of quintessentially Irish phenomenon, or was. I don't know whether the Celtic Tiger and subsequent history have put pay to it. But when I lived in Ireland, I remember I used to busk, and I was a juggler, and I was a very good juggler, and I could do combination tricks. So I could ride a unicycle, balance something on my nose, juggle with one hand, and spin an object. That was my sort of special trick. And that's quite hard, doing four different things at once. And I can remember doing this quite early on in my busking time in Dublin, and some kid said something like, Jesus, look at him showing off. What a show off. And that used to happen quite a lot in Dublin. And I would think it wouldn't happen anywhere else. People would be mean to you in different ways and, you know, push you off and stick things in you and do all kinds of things. But nobody ever quite did that. And that, I think, it was a very sort of Irish thing of, because of course, yes, I was showing off. That was the activity. That's kind of begrudging. And you can sense a terrible amount of begrudgery in the attitude towards the rank charm school, which is a sort of a strange mix of kind of erotic obsession and satire. So it's sort of taking the mickey out of it. So it's never taken seriously. And in fact, the name rank charm school was given to it disparagingly. And in that, I find something very recognisable, because I think it still circles around drama schools, for instance, the idea that they're silly, or that they're full of sort of people at sort of finishing school, or very posh, or whatever those feelings are, or even maybe in the mockery of the method school. And it goes back to the beginning. It goes back to the founding of the Academy of Dramatic Art by Beerbohm Tree. Robert Aikens talks about actors hissing poison in his ear because he'd gone to the academy to try and learn how to do it. And I think there's something lingering, maybe still, certainly in terms of how people think about the rank charm school. Anyway, it began because of a shortage of actors, or certainly a shortage of stars to take part in the movies. It's one of these fascinating periods when the problem is there aren't enough actors. In this case, there aren't enough stars. And that's kind of a received history, but it appears to be true. So here's something from a newspaper of the time, actually from the Daily Mail. The headline is Too Few Stars for Too Many British Films. And the article says, crisis follows crisis in the British film industry. The worries go on even when the state's film finance company comes forward with loans like the $1 million announced yesterday as a leg up for Cords Pictures. You can always count on something to hold up production. If it isn't lack of money, it's lack of studio space. No names, no pack. Now there's a surplus of studio space. Warner Brothers are closing down at Teddington because no independent producer can be found to make pictures there. A new crisis looms up. Shortage of stars. Production plans are piling up at an impressive rate, but the number of box office names is not growing in proportion, and producers are finding it a desperate job to spin out the supply. So exhausted star actors are having to do vast amounts of acting because there aren't enough. It's fascinating. The rank studios are hardest hit for the simple reason that they make the bulk of Britain's pictures. In the next quota year, they plan to make 60 compared with 45 in the current one. It's 1945, so rank are going to make 60 movies. 60 British films in Britain, feature films. But where are they going to find all the stars to put them over is another matter. Hollywood's envy. The near stars, feature and small part players, raise no problem. Their abundance, in fact, is the wonder and envy of Hollywood. It's the people who can pack a cinema that are so scarce. You can count them on just about two hands. Among the men are John Mills, Laurence Olivier, Michael Wilding, Stuart Granger, Robert Donat, and Jack Warner. Among the women, Margaret Lockwood, Anna Neagle, Anne Todd, Patricia Rock, and Jean Simmons. These stars are working harder today than they have ever worked before. Where they used to make two pictures a year, they now make three, and in many cases four and five. Producers are registering films a year ahead to stake their claim on one or other of the precious few who can be counted on to pull the public in. Sometimes, all they have in mind is a title. The script, director, and other details can wait. It's the star that matters. Margaret Lockwood's filming dates look like the Belle of the Ball's dance card. Of its time. She's booked up for the next 2 years. As the big names become booked up, so the demand increases for the stars-to-be and the people who stay just on the fringe of stardom. Consider, for example, 19-year-old Susan Shaw. This little girl from the Sydney Box Company of Youth, now part of the Rank Charm School, will be seen in 8 new box pictures between now and the middle of next year. She's already booked for one beginning next June. So Sydney Box is the person that starts this school of charm, originally at the Riverside Studios, and then moves to Highbury. So it's a church hall. It's always church halls, isn't it? The London Theatre Studio starts in the church hall. The Drama Centre is in a church. It's a church hall in Highbury. Not quite sure if it's still there, but anyway. She's already booked for one beginning next June. David Tomlinson has 6 on his list, and Catherine Harrison 5. The Rank producers meet every Friday to battle over the desk for box office names or to trade one for another. You can have Lockwood next March if I can have Simmons in May. Sometimes they meet 2 or 3 times in between. If you don't plan far ahead like this, you find yourself right out of the running these days, says Sydney Box, chief of Gainsborough Pictures, with a £3 million annual budget of films which he must stud with stars. The production boost is creating a tremendous new opportunity for the budding Lockwood or Mills. So there's a crisis in British film. There's loads of cinema going is at its absolute peak. People are making vast amounts of movies. I don't know why it wasn't considered that the drama schools that existed were able to provide stars for this new industry. I mean, they did. So a number of the names there had gone to drama schools. And Diana Dawes, who's going to figure as a key graduate of the Rank School of Charm, was in fact a graduate of Lambda, the first real incarnation of Lambda as a drama school under, I think, Wilfred Pickles a few years before this. So the drama schools were producing actors who became stars, but obviously not in the way they wanted to. So Sydney Box, along with Arthur Rank, sets up this company of youth, this Rank School Charm, and he recruits Molly Terrain and other people to teach there. And this is where the problem comes, I think, because Molly Terrain, the much mocked, much maligned, sort of hated Molly Terrain, had been a teacher at RADA. So Molly Terrain had taught at RADA, and I'm sure other places, but I've been able to at least track her to RADA in the war years. And some actors actually speak about her very fondly. So she taught something called improvisation. So she was an acting tutor. She coaches people for Rank on films, including Ophelia in Laurence Olivier's Hamlet, famously, who was a huge star. And then she gets this job as the head of this school of youth, this place where they're going to train actors. And the training, you'll hear, I'll read some articles from The Time in a sec, but the training sounds strangely old-fashioned. The sort of the mocked version of it, which happens in the film Lady Godiva Rides Again, is sort of 2 things. One, people doing rather ludicrous elocution lessons, which you heard at the beginning there. And also walking around with a book on your head. There's an awful lot of pictures of people walking around with books on their head. When they're not walking around with books in their head or doing very sort of old-fashioned elocution type stuff, they seem to be kissing. So there's also an awful lot of shots of people kissing, being taught how to kiss with Molly kind of gesturing to show them how to do it. Normally in those pictures, the terrified-looking boys and rather more comfortable-looking women, but anyway, maybe that's just the what the photographer captured. And then the other kinds of images are lots of really intense acting, with Molly Terrain sometimes doing something which looks to me like she's getting people to connect to their abdominal breath or their diaphragm or a central connection. They're interesting pictures, and I've got a little theory. I'll stop theorizing in a minute, but I wonder if that's because Molly Terrain had worked with famous voice teacher, Iris Warren. Iris Warren also teaching at RADA during the Second World War before she went to Lambda and taught people like Kristen Linklater. It just looks to me like Molly Terrain is doing quite Kristen Linklater-y stuff in terms of getting the actors to connect some kind of really strong, embodied, breath-rooted emotion. But anyway, so what's curious is why that's so mocked, because some of the work looks quite good. Another curious thing is that Molly Terrain had run a theatre in Worthing, the Connacht Theatre in Worthing, which was owned by Rank, and actors from the School of Charm would sometimes go and do some acting on stage as part of their training. They also did an awful lot of going to events and functions and, as you heard at the beginning, distributing programmes at posh do's, borrowing dresses from stars, going along and opening sort of fates, appearing as guests, often before they'd done anything. So it was quite common to see a Rank starlet at an event. The name following it would sometimes be somebody that nobody ever heard of. So I don't know. It's funny. It's like, is it actually a real attempt to train people? Is it just a publicity vehicle? I'm not sure. I think the jury would still be out. It certainly didn't last very long. It closes after a few years. But anyway, maybe the best thing would be to go and listen to a few articles from the time when people either talk about or go and visit the Company of Youth, the Rank School of Charm, in the 1940s and early 1950s. A curiosity of actor training in the British Drama School. So this is a fairly classic article. This is from The Sphere in 1947. And the article is called How Mr. Rank Grooms for Stardom, The Company of Youth at Highbury, Where Budding Screen Stars Acquire Technique. So that's one version of this, Where Budding Screen Stars Acquire Technique. And so who's going to go there? Mr. Charles Graves is going to spend a day. It's a fabulous picture. So the middle of the article has this picture of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 young ladies and 1, 2, 3 young men, young women and young men standing around with Molly Terrain in one of her crazy hats. And it's called, the article is called The Technique of Screen Lovemaking. Prompted by Miss Molly Terrain and watched by other members of the company, Sean Noble and Susan Shaw learn the difference between private demonstrations of affection and those which are recorded by sharp-lensed cameras under the glare of arc lights. Whatever they do, the loving couple must not move their feet from the chalked position, or the cameraman will have something to say about it. This picture was taken at the Highbury Studios, where Mr. James Rank has organised the Company of Youth, a training ground for budding screenplayers. On the left are Zena Marshall and Sonia Holm. The couple on the right are Calder Wood and Pat Goddard. So the sort of the joke about the Company of Youth is that these people will never be heard of again. I'll read you something later, which could lead to some revision about this. But anyway, it's a fabulous picture. I'll make it the cover of the podcast because it's really fascinating. So great. So that's the picture. Now, Charles Graves is going to tell us about what happens when he went to the Company of Youth in 1947. 9 pretty girls and 3 presentable young men were counting 1, 2, 3, 4 to a tune from Annie Get Your Gun, played by a pianist in a large hall in North London, as they went through a series of motions. Red-headed Freddie Carpenter stopped the performance every few minutes and gave further instructions. Then the pianist tinkled out the tune again and the routine went on. I watched for half an hour. That's nice, that's a proper amount of time to watch people trying to act. One of the girls wore Prussian blue trousers down to her ankles. Another wore a maroon pair of slacks rolled up to knee length. The other girls wore various cheap cotton dresses. The 3 young men wore flannel trousers and white shirts. I can see he was really concentrating on what they were doing in their acting. This had been going on for an hour and a half before my arrival. Finally, there came a welcome break. The girls went to a mirror and combed their hair and generally made themselves presentable. The young men sighed deeply and put on their jackets. This dozen of young people were the exact human equivalent of 12 Beckhampton yearlings, except that the yearlings would have been worth much more on the hoof at the moment, but were liable to earn much less in years to come. So he's comparing them to young horses. People are very glamorous at these times. If you look at pictures of people at drama school, any drama school, from RADA to the London Mask Studio to various places, people tend to be incredibly well turned out. I think it's why Saint-Denis School, both before and after the war, must have been really surprising, because people wore sort of uniforms, like sort of bathing suits designed by the Motleys, similar to the thing in a movement class to this day, where students are encouraged to wear clothes that show their bodies, that ask them to become comfortable in their own skin. I'm not sure if that's maybe moving out of fashion. But anyway, these people are normally remarkably well turned out. So they're like young horses. They're not worth as much now, but one day they might be worth a lot more if they become stars. The caption above will have already disclosed the fact that I have been paying a visit to Mr. Rank's School of Acting at Highbury, officially known as the Company of Youth, a rather affected label. Harsh, isn't it? You invite somebody along and they mock. You see what I mean? They're mocking. But both men and women are being manufactured. But it is as far a cry from Highbury to real stardom as it is from Highbury to the first stage of becoming a film star. Every week, 300 letters from would-be film actors and film actresses, from their cousins, their sisters, their aunts and agents, reach the Rank organisation. 200 of these are quite hopeless. 200 out of 300. The remainder are screened again and again, leaving 20 to be seen personally by David Henley, the head of Piffle. I beg your pardon, of Production Facilities Films Limited. That province of the Rank Empire which handles all artistes, among other things. In addition to the letters and the agents who telephone for appointments with a photograph of their latest discovery or the latest discovery herself, there are the six talent scouts. Six talent scouts who scour every music hall, repertory theatre and suburban arts theatre for the likely newcomers to the screen. In the film Lady Godiva Rides Again, the journey into and out of this world for the protagonist begins with a sort of local, kind of slightly kinky beauty competition, a Lady Godiva competition. And then she goes up to a sort of another competition for soap, and then wins and gets sort of brought to the Rank Charm School. As you heard, I think Lady Godiva Rides Again is quite a good film. It's certainly quite a good slightly satirical exploration of this world of its early 1950s fame and stardom. One of the actors in it is Diana Dawes, who is a sort of key product of this period. And I have to say, rather magnificent Diana Dawes, in all kinds of ways, extraordinary actor. What a voice. Like, talk about a connected voice. If that had anything to do with her training at Lambda, then it was a hell of a training, because she's got a remarkably connected sound. So much for the different ways in which the would-be film actor or actress gets a chance of an interview with David Henley in what used to be Lord Aberconway's beautiful house in South Street, Mayfair. So you go for your interview in South Street, Mayfair. Once ushered into the gigantic salon and invited to sit down for a personal scrutiny by the disillusioned yet permanently hopeful David, the aspirant is subjected to a formidable harangue, which goes something like this. Why do you think you're going to be a film star? There are 50 million people in Great Britain. We make 35 pictures a year, for which we have 20 leading ladies. To keep the ball rolling, we need only to start 2 girls a year. Now, of the 50 million people in Great Britain, 25 million are females, of which 6 million or 7 million are the same age as yourself. What you have got to say to yourself is, I am going to be one of those 2 girls. This means that I will have to persuade every woman that I am better looking, that I am better than the other 6 million or 7 million acting, and compel all of them to pay money to see me on the screen because I am so good. Now, I repeat, why do you want to be a film star? It is seldom, indeed, that the aspirant will give the correct answer, which is, I don't want to be a film star, I just want to be a good actress. A kid of 17 said that last week, and she was immediately told, you're in. Well, there you go. Look, they've given it away. So any actress reading Charles Graves' article in The Sphere in 1947, and presumably they would have done, well, then know exactly what to say when they ask you that question. Being in means, A, 2 or 3 weeks with expenses paid at Highbury Training School, following which, if approved, comes a real salary every week for 6 months for further tuition, followed again, if the option is taking up, by another 6 months with the same rate of pay. Thereafter, individual contracts alter, both from the point of view of increase in salary and for the length of contract, which may be anything from 7 to 10 years, with annual increments. Strange, isn't it? The studio system. I happen to know, it may come up later in the article, but it was £10 a week. So people were paid £10 a week to go. Well, that's a big deal, isn't it? Because that's not an insignificant amount of money. That means you're not paying for your tuition. So this is a very strange moment when people are paid reasonably good money to train to be movie stars. Imagine that. Girls accepted are, as a rule, not less than 16, not more than 23. Young men tend to be rather older, between 24 and 30. At the present minute, the school has 10 girls and 8 young men under tuition. Their hours of attendance are from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. There is a principal, Miss Molly Terrain, and 8 other coaches who teach fencing, elocution, drama, physical training, movement, and so forth. Horse riding and motor car driving are not yet in the curriculum, but no doubt will soon be included. Is he trying to be funny? A few yards away from the hall where all this tuition takes place are the Highbury Studios, where Mr. Rank has acquired for the purpose of making curtain raisers, which he has acquired. Curtain raisers are second-rate feature films lasting about 3/4 of an hour. The purpose of these curtain raisers is twofold. They will take the place of the present B films imported from the United States and will provide practical training for the future film stars. This training can be anything from playing a second leading part, such as John Stone will have in Colonel Bogey, to walking on parts which will eliminate camera shyness on the part of the prospective starlets. John Croydon, who is producing these curtain raisers, is genuinely enthusiastic about his job of breaking in the youngsters. It sounds good. He keeps in close contact with all of them, reads their monthly confidential reports. I love the way they get a monthly report from Molly. And takes the greatest care not to give them larger parts than they can play. He tests them. He gives them auditions. He makes them read small parts in tests, known as stooging. He gives them confidence without encouraging swelled heads. So stooging is when you read in for somebody else, often for screen tests or potentially rehearsals, auditions. So often with your back to the actor, you would read in. That's called stooging. In certainly in British film vocabulary. Still, I think, just about knocks around as a term. I completely forgot to say, one of the reasons why I started thinking about the Rank Charm School was because Claire Bloom was 90 this week. So that was the other piece of news, the big appointment at Central, and Claire Bloom passing 90. And Claire Bloom was a sort of famous product of the Rank Charm School. Every now and then, the youngsters are sent off to the Repertory Theatre at Worthing, I think I mentioned that earlier, which is in close touch with the Rank organisation so that they can act before live audiences. Rather like greyhounds sent off to chase a live hare before returning to the electrical rabbit. Personal appearances, giving prizes at Speedway meet. It's Speedway, people always talk about Speedway. It's huge at this time. Going at Speedway, motorbikes, watching people race on motorbikes, massive. So these sort of lovely young, I think mostly young women, maybe young men too, go and give prizes away as a Rank starlet. Amazing. Strange. And millinery exhibitions, mannequin parades, and all those things, all tend to groom these young persons for stardom, giving them poise and confidence, getting their faces known in advance to their future public, and maintaining their original enthusiasm. For the average, this is why you need your enthusiasm by being sent off to the Speedway. For the average film aspirant has no idea of the hard work and drudgery necessary today to become a real star. Most of them think in the first instance that all they have to do is to be their own attractive selves to secure a £500 a week contract. The mental shock when they discover how much they've got to learn in the way of deportment, breathing, elocution, and a dozen different subjects quite apart from acting itself is considerable. First of all, they need to acquire a speaking voice which is intelligible to American audiences as well as to ours. John Mills and Anne Todd are two good examples of people who have voices which are not regarded as affected by the critical United States audiences. The South African public, by the way, cannot understand Cockney. Other dominions and colonies are equally allergic to anything but the cosmopolitan voice. In a way, it is a pity that dialect is becoming more and more taboo on the screen. The fact remains, however, that if a Yorkshireman cannot understand Somerset, it is anti-box office to encourage accents which must be all the more intelligible to people living thousands of miles away. This is so strange, isn't it? We're talking about sort of film acting. And this this is the elephant in the room of correct speech, which always lurks around any kind of discussions about the drama school. This was the time when Kenneth Barnes, who I'm not quite sure what Kenneth Barnes' ideas about acting really were, but certainly would take a personal hand in the correction of speech, wanting to flatten out those dialects. I mean, here it's funny that it's being made from the argument is international. Anyway, I suppose I think we would find that problematic and maybe disagree with it, but that's what the article is saying. Elocution, therefore, plays a big part in the curriculum at Highbury. We heard that at the beginning. There are also lectures from producers, cameramen, sound experts and directors. The youngsters are taught all about the mic, which is both a curse and a blessing, in the same way they are taught about makeup, dress and movement. Fencing is a particularly important part of the curriculum, not because any of these youngsters are likely to take part in a film where a duel will be put to the screen, but because fencing is regarded as one of the best ways in which to learn graceful movement and poise. Physical jerks are also taught. I always wonder what they are. Physical jerks. You can do physical jerks. Keep fit with what must be seem deadly monotony to film-struck young girls who think there's a shortcut to stardom. I didn't ask any of these young girls what they think. Of the 12 youngsters whom I saw at Highbury, it is like horses. I picked out Zena Marshall, Pat Owens, Rosemary Treston, and Peter Murray as being likely to hit the neon lights within the next 3 years. One would have thought that there must be a good deal of jealousy among these prospective film stars when one of them is given a small part in a real production. In fact, after having watched them doing their routine, I had mentally sketched out a plot for a film in which the ambitions and the rivalries of the students could lead to all kinds of interesting situations. I was assured by Miss Roylance, whose job it is to be their universal aunt, that as far as she could tell, they all got along like that proverbial misnomer, a happy family. Well, you'd wonder, wouldn't you? The reason, by the way, that I saw only a dozen of them simultaneously was that the remaining six were either at Worthing, that's the theatre, making personal appearances at a speedway, playing bit parts in current productions, interesting, or stooging. One of them, Peggy Evans, has been loaned to Henry Shirk for his new play, My Wives and I. Pretty soon, the school will be transferred from Highbury to central London. I don't think that ever happens. I think it never gets transferred. In the meantime, David Henley says that there's no difficulty in finding talent. The real trouble is to teach the youngsters, who need character and enthusiasm as well as a flair for acting, if they are to succeed. At the moment, he is only looking for boys and girls who, when polished, will be glamorous. That's a little sinister thing there, isn't it? So we're definitely dealing with something which is about glamour, which I think codes for being... Well, glamour meets glamour, but it also includes good looks. So it's not a character. It's not a character school. Anyway, certainly. Around the same time, in Australian Women's Weekly, there's an article from Bill Strutton in London. I suspect there may have been a bit of a push on the publicity. This one's called Hard Work and No Glamour for Starlets. So this is a different journalist. Might make a nice contrast. He writes... Many a romantic young English girl, dreaming of overnight film stardom, would wake with a shock if a producer really decided she was the girl he was seeking to make into a star. Well, maybe that's true. I don't know how you know. The first thing the huge J. Arthur Rank organisation does when it discovers a newcomer as star material is to pick her up gently and shake the stardust out of her eyes. There are no parties and no fan mail for months. Maybe years. The candidate for stardom is sent to school with an allowance of £10 a week and a few weeks' rations. Of course, it's rationing time. I wonder how much is £10. I know Diana Dawes says in one of her biographies, it says it's not that much money. You can make more money modelling. So it's not that much money, but it's some money. Blimey, I think I remember signing on in the 80s and it was like 20 quid a week. So this is 1940s. So I imagine it's a reasonable amount of money. I don't know. The school is called the Company of Youth, and to the horror of its teachers, but the secret delight of its starlit pupils, newspapermen have taken to calling it Rank's Charm School. I haven't been able to find the origins of this thing. So that was something I hoped I'd be able to find from newspaper searches, who first called it the Charm School. Can't find out, maybe somebody would know. Its proper name does sound a little earnest. Okay, fine. There, back at school, the new starlet meekly accepts reproofs when she falls to dreaming of a mink coat, and usually suffers the humiliation of being told in front of others that her accent is terrible. She loses her illusions and her self-consciousness very quickly. Interesting, isn't it? I wonder if this is why almost nobody speaks with any fondness of the charm school, of the Company of Youth. Most actors who left it seem to be slightly ashamed. It's a very curious thing. So maybe it was because of this. Certainly think that's possible. Certainly Diana Dawes seems to have hated Molly Terrain, who, as I've mentioned, I'm becoming slightly obsessed with. I now realise why. If you look at pictures of Molly Terrain, I'll try and link you to a few or stick some. Yeah, no, I'll definitely put one of Molly up on the podcast. She's got incredible focus. I mean, the thing that I think when I look at the pictures is that for all that she's mocked in that very English way, she seems to me to be really, really attending to the work of the actors in front of her. Now, that may be because she can turn it on for the cameras. She was an actor, a silent movie actor. Again, in the Diana Dawes biography, I think Diana Dawes, there's no actual sort of quote, but the biographer says that Molly Terrain was a failed silent movie actor who was bitter with the world. I don't know where he got that from, but anyway, that's possible. I see somebody who's really kind of on it. The article goes on to talk about some of the folk. The Company of Youth is now 2 years old and is responsible for most of the new faces now appearing on the British screen. Patrick Holt, formerly a young British colonel in Burma, came back to school and as a result won feature film roles in The October Man with John Mills and in The Mark of Cain opposite Sally Gray. Hazel Court, who there's a few people, I'll skip over a couple, but anyway, it mentions Maxwell Reed, the tall, dark, strikingly handsome hero of Dear Murderer, and then Hazel Court, who now has a string of films behind her, including Holiday Camp and Meet Me at Dawn, started her career there. So, I don't know. People are getting jobs back to school. They all had to sit on forms. I don't know what that means. Sit on forms. Is that a typo or is that any phrase? Sitting on forms. You have to sit on, maybe it's a kind of sitting up nicely. Stand up to recite their pieces and listen hard when the principal, Molly Terrain, gestured and mimed and drilled them in the art of acting before the camera. I visited the Company of Youth at its studios in Highbury this week. In one room, a number of pretty young girls and handsome lads, mostly teenagers, sat around in a circle while their teacher, a portly, motherly woman, had them intoning the alphabet. This was the breathing class. In addition, their curriculum includes movement and mime, fencing, accent correction, play reading, script study, rehearsing of excerpts. Sorry, I can't read that. Excerpts. Remedial exercises and diction. You kind of wonder what that means. So there's accent correction, lots of that. People sound mad. There's a film I've mentioned already, Lady Godiva Rides Again. It's quite a good film, I think, quite good acting. But it starts sort of up north somewhere, and they've all got these sort of hilarious accents, apart from George Cole, who plays sort of comedy Cockney. Also, doesn't really make sense that he's up in the industrial north. And in another article I read, the curriculum's described as walking, laughing and crying. So there you go, good skills for an actor to have. The first 3 months at the Rank Company of Youth is called quaintly, but with some accuracy, the Purdah period. because not until after that time are the starlets allowed into the wider and more exciting world where actual films are made, and where they can meet producers, directors and stars, and maybe be allowed to walk on in a big part, in a bit part themselves. Grooming also includes posing for publicity shots in ultra-formal evening clothes or gay beachwear, taking on a job as a star's stand-in to see how they work, and sometimes acting as usherettes at some large and glittering charity premiere of a new film. That's obviously true, because that happens in Lady Godiva Rides Again. There's a sort of a mean joke about usherettes selling programmes, which obviously has some truth in it. If the pupils can garner experience on the way by acting in some small repertory company, they are gladly let off from school for the richer experience of actual work on the stage. For this reason, Arthur Rank has interests in a small repertory company at Worthing. I think that's kind of fascinating. This is the Connacht. So you head off and you do a bit of acting on stage. Each month, Molly Terrain sends in a school report on the progress of each pupil. In addition to acting as stand-ins and gathering practical experience on the stage of some small theatre, many of Molly Terrain's children will be drafted into roles, in children in inverted commas, into roles in Highbury Studios, which have just opened into production of second feature films as a new branch of film magnate Rank's activities. Currently, John Stone, a square-jawed, fair-haired, talented young actor whose monthly reports are sprinkled with high praise, is co- I wonder if those reports exist. Wouldn't that be wonderful to find a pile of Molly Terrain's reports on the starlets of the Company of Youth knocking around somewhere in an archive? There probably are some, aren't there? Sprinkled with high praise, is co-starring there opposite Ealing star Jane Barrett, the girl chosen for the role of Alicia Dunn in Australia's Eureka Stockade, in a period comedy called Colonel Bogey. How are the pupils for stardom chosen? There are now 22 under the teachers of the Company of Youth, and a large majority of them had previous experience before being found by talent scouts. Rarely does a letter accompanied by a photograph sufficiently convince the casting bureau of the vast Rank organisation that the applicant is sufficiently keen or capable for films. So great is Principal Molly Terrain's reputation for coaching among film producers, she comes from a theatrical family and has played every sort of role herself, that she is often called in to groom a prospective star in a particular film part or even for a film test. At present, she is down at Denham, spending all her time by the side of young Jean Simmons, who, though she has never played Shakespeare before, is appearing as Ophelia to Sir Laurence Olivier's Hamlet. So Molly Terrain wasn't there when this article is made. Molly, the small, vital mother of a 20-year-old daughter herself, has already seen the graduation of many of her starlets to feature roles and even star status. So Molly, the small, I think she looks vital as well. Interesting. And she had quite a good career, lots of theatre, quite a lot of silent film, and she appears as a coach in quite a lot of movies. I looked at, tried finding out about Molly. I think people are a bit mean about her, and I think it's, I don't know, I is there a misogyny there, or there's something curious lurking around? I mean, she is bonkers. She looks crazy, surrounded by these little sort of boys and girls wearing little tiny shorts, and there's Molly dressed all in black, sort of staring intently at them with a huge hat on. Clearly an eccentric, but we like eccentrics, I think. Tiny honey blonde Carol Marsh went from her classroom straight to stardom in Brighton Rock, opposite Richard Attenborough. Well, that's Brighton Rock. That's not a failure. Tall, glamorous Sonia Holm is an example of an actress who has arrived through the Company of Youth. Firstly, she got a small part in Peter Ustinov's Top Secret, then a slightly larger role in Ealing's The Loves of Joanna Godden, and currently a plum part in Gainsborough's another big studio, Rescue. Other graduates from the Company of Youth gradually being worked into British films are blonde Susan Shaw, who features in Gainsborough's Miranda, and Anatole de Grunewald's Bond Street. Hefty character actor Andrew Crawford, Hefty character actor. It's a nice description, isn't it? Hefty character actor. So they did train some character actors. Andrew, or does it mean hefty in terms of, I don't know what that means, who is featured in The Brothers and Dear Murderer, mentioned earlier. So that's, you know, people are working quite a lot. So anyway, drawing to the end of this little sketch, really, of the Company of Youth, do look at the documentary. There's a documentary, a Barry Norman documentary from the 80s, I think, which I'll put a link to. And then you could watch the film, which is on Amazon Prime, certainly, or Amazon, Lady Godiva Rides Again. The Barry Norman documentary basically reaches the conclusion that the Company of Youth is sort of risible and ludicrous. And maybe it was, I don't know, maybe Molly Terrain was a sort of the harridan that Diana Dawes describes her as. Maybe it was all rather daft, but somewhere in it, I see something rather interesting, an early attempt for camera acting, perhaps paying actors to train, which is really radical and interesting. That never really caught on. Introducing people via what you might call professional development, lectures, trips to studios. I think all of that stuff is good. So curious that the basic press on the Charm School was that it was disastrous and ridiculous. A typical example, I'm going to read you something just to conclude, a tiny article which talks about the Charm School. Fairly typical article, this. It's headed, "They Left School," from London. Rank's original Charm School for grooming beautiful girls into great stars closed 2 years ago after running 2 years. What happened to the girls who went to it? Or went through it? Weren't only girls, but anyway, obviously everyone was always mostly interested in the girls. Out of one group, only one is under contract to the Rank organisation, blonde Susan Shaw. She is 21 and the wife of actor Albert Leven. Many of the girls have quit films entirely. So we're going to hear a tale of how ridiculously disastrous it was. Claire Bloom made only one picture. She's now back on the stage. Well, Claire Bloom did okay. Josephine Stewart says frankly, "I'm completely out of work." Sandra Dawn, 24, was paid £10 a week, rising to £15 after 6 months at the Charm School. Let's get a rise. She's now in a London pantomime. Well, nothing wrong with pantomimes, that's all right. Carol Marsh, 20, made 5 films. Her contract ended a year ago. Since then, she has done a little stage and television work. Diana Dawes became a Rank protege at 15. Since leaving his company, she has made 1 freelance film. She did go off to Hollywood and nearly become a star. For Rank, the closing of his Charm School was a bitter disappointment. He had hoped to make stars on the mass production system, but it did not work. So that, I suppose, is the final conclusion. But Claire Bloom? Diana Dawes? I don't know. A lot of drama schools would be quite proud to have a list of alumni as successful as the Rank Charm School, the Company of Youth. Anyway, so I'm sorry if that wasn't very detailed. I was just trying to get something down, sketch, to begin understanding something of the place of the Rank Charm School in the history of actor training. I think it counts. Not exactly a drama school, but actor training. And also just to wonder out loud about why it's treated with such derision, where that came from, whether it was justified, or whether some kind of a revision could be made by somebody who wanted to make it about the Charm School, and also to pay a little bit of sort of respect to Molly Terrain, a silent film actress, an Edwardian stage actress who worked as a director, what was called a producer back then, including running the Connacht Theatre in Worthing, was the principal of the Rank Charm School and coached actors in what are actually still some rather wonderful performances. So everyone hated her, I think, but I feel a certain respect and affection for Molly Terrain. So thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope it was of some interest. If you are enjoying these podcasts, if you find them useful or interesting, it would be lovely if you could find a way to support them. A review is always wonderful. I love reading the reviews. Contact me. I like getting letters, emails on robertprice1869@gmail.com. That's robertprice1869@gmail.com. And finally, if you are feeling generous, then financial support is also really welcome. There's a support button on the website. They do take some money to make and maintain, so that would be received with huge gratitude and love. Hope you're having an okay time. I feel like we're emerging from lockdown three. I don't know. Is it possible that the sun is coming, that the spring is around the corner? I hope so. Okay. Have a good week. Bye.